Blog Talk Radio.
Nice time off here. Had a good holiday break. I hope everybody else enjoyed theirs. I know it's fucking hell right now in North Texas and some other places. So shout out to everybody over there. I know there were insane numbers of tornadoes happening. In fact, some of them were really close to Lilith Penn, who, of course, is my right-hand girl here at Secular Talk. And just barely missed where she is. And Alex Young is another great listener of the show. And it hit like 2 miles away from where he was. And then he had to help with the cleanup effort and, you know, rescue attempts and stuff. I mean, amazing stuff and really scary and really mortifying. And that's a fucking humanizing experience, man. Lilith was telling me earlier about how nothing prepares you for seeing just this gigantic force of nature right in front of your face, and you're just so helpless in front of it. So, I mean, feel bad for everybody. Over 40 people are dead as a result of these storms. I mean, it's really crazy stuff. So, my heart goes out to everybody affected by that. I mean, now I'm going to sound like a dick, but it was kind of pleasant over here in New York. Sorry. I mean, it was 60 degrees, 65 degrees on Christmas Eve, and Christmas Day was probably like 60. I mean, it was raining on and off, but who cares? Rain is nothing compared to tornadoes. So I hope everybody, hopefully you had time off, and hopefully you enjoyed that time off. I know not everybody is lucky enough to have that experience, because we live in the United States of America, where you're worked to the fucking bone. No paid time off by law, of course. But I'm happy to be back, and this week is almost a full week, though not exactly, because Friday for New Year's Day we're off, but Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday we're here. We're here New Year's Eve. So fear not, a whole bunch of material going to be dumped in your lap this week. So I got a bunch of stuff to get to today. We have an entrepreneur in California is sick of money and politics, and he's actually going to do something about it. This is rare that you see somebody in the private sector who is rich step up and say, you know, fuck this whole corrupt system. Let's actually fight against it. I'm going to give you the details of that in a second. We got some other corruption stories about how disaster relief money is going to build mansions for governors. Stay classy. And later on in the show, I'm going after everybody today. I'm going after fundamentalist Muslims. I'm going after fundamentalist Jews. I'm going after, do I have one against Christians today? That might be a first in Secular Talk history. We're not going after Christians today. Yeah, I'm actually not sure. I don't think so. Christians, you get off for one day. You're welcome. And needless to say, we'll have some stuff on Bernie Sanders, some economic stuff, including Germany is now flirting with the idea of a basic income, which is an interesting policy we discussed recently. But let's kick it off here, and I'll do that with some interesting and fun personal news here. So I've been nominated for Atheist of the Year, and specifically I think it's Atheist of the Year in the social media category. There's other categories as well, including activist and author, and I think one or two others on top of that. So I'm flattered by this. At Godless Utopia on Twitter put me in their poll, and I don't know how the process works. I don't know if there was some sort of nomination process, and then I got in, or if they chose, and then it was up to everybody to vote on it. But we cruised through the first round of voting. I guess it was like a bracket system, you can say. So we cruised through the first round, then the quarterfinals, cruised through, semifinals, cruised through. Now we're in the finals, and we're up against a podcast. I believe it's called Godless Spellchecker. And I've heard wonderful things about the podcast. So for those of you who haven't checked it out, you might want to go check that out as well. Perhaps vote for them if they're better than me. but I actually do kind of want to win. I'm not going to lie. I always come out here and give the talks about how, you know, I'm against award shows and award ceremonies and whatnot. And usually that's because you have to go behind the scenes and grease palms and shake hands of people who are powerful, who make the decisions. And this isn't, and it's usually not like a democratic vote to determine who wins certain things. In this case, it appears like it is a democratic vote. I didn't have to, you know, suck up to people behind the scenes in any way, shape, or form to get this award or to get this far in the process. So it would be fucking awesome if you guys voted for me in this. This is, you could just vote on Twitter. At Godless Utopia is the account. They tweeted it out. I retweeted it. I'll retweet it again later on. It's only a 24-hour poll. You can minus like 3 or 4 because they released it 3 or 4 hours ago. So if you have a Twitter account, go to at Godless Utopia and their account or their page and vote in that poll. I'd really appreciate it if we win the finals, which means we win Social Media Atheist of the Year. And then we go to the real main event, which is just Atheist of the Year, period. And in that category, not only do I not expect to win, even necessarily want to win, because I would be up against Raif Badawi. Raif Badawi is, you know, somebody who's a real hero, who actually is suffering tremendous consequences for speaking up for rationality and logic and secularism and atheism in a totally closed society with no freedoms, socially speaking. So I don't want to win. I'm going to vote for Raif Badawi in the finals. But if we get to the finals, it would be, I think, me, Richard Dawkins, Sam Harris, and Raif Badawi. But I would like to win Social Media Atheist of the Year. So if you can, I'd really appreciate it. If you have a Twitter account, go and vote for me. Thanks so much if you do. And if you don't, I still love you. Okay. So that's a nice little cheap plug. I'd like to be Atheist of the Year this year. Thank you very much. All right. Now let's get into some news. Kick it off here with some corruption stuff. John Cox is an entrepreneur from California, and he's apparently fed up with corrupt politicians, so he decided to do something about it. So he launched a campaign called California is Not for Sale, where he called for a ballot initiative. Politicians wear patches that have the corporate names on them, like NASCAR. This is a great idea. This is an idea that's been floated in a joking way in the past. I think Jon Stewart has mentioned it. I've certainly mentioned it in the past on the show, though to be fair, I didn't come up with the idea. I had read about it somewhere else in other articles that had mentioned it. So this is an idea that's been floating around for a while, and here we have a rich entrepreneur who says, yeah, I don't like the corruption either, and I'm actually going to push to try to get something like this in place. Now, it's unclear as to whether or not it's literal, like he really wants the patches on the suits, or there's another part of the article that hints at how he wants to do it in campaign ads, where at the end of the ad or during the ad, you're mandated by law to put your top 10 contributors' logos on the screen to let everybody know who you're really representing. But either way, in all seriousness, I would support either one. I mean, I doubt that people would be willing to go as far as to have them wear patches so that you can see just how brazen the corruption is. But something like, you know, putting it in ads and showing who's funding them, I mean, that to me makes as much sense as when they run a pharmaceutical ad and they have to tell you side effects include you're going to bleed out of your ass, die, sneeze nonstop, and have cancer or whatever the fuck it is. And again, to be crystal clear, I would support either way. I would love it if they had to wear the patches. But that's something that somehow I feel like the establishment would defeat that, even though it's a direct ballot initiative. I don't know all the ins and outs of how that works in California. But something that shows just how corrupt they are, I think would be fantastic. So let me give you his quote, because he says a lot of great things. He's really on point here. He says, "Our elected leaders are controlled by their funders. In other words, this isn't a stunt. This is a very serious initiative. This is not a joke. If you came down from Mars and you looked at how our electoral system works, you'd say to yourself, how dumb is this? You've got a system under which people who want something from the government fund the campaigns of the people who make the decisions. How stupid is that system? I frankly wish that every legislator who walks into that chamber would have a clean suit on." So he goes on to explain that he had people coming up to him and asking to sign the petition. And, quote, "It didn't matter if they were liberal or conservative or no party. The public gets it. The public understands who controls the political system in this country. The core of the corruption in the system is the power of the funders." So, again, he's a zillion percent correct. And you ready for a curveball I'm going to throw at you right now? He's a Republican. Well, you're like, what? No, but this is one of the things we've been trying to get across to you for the longest time. It's that there are certain issues truly are bipartisan among the people. So among the people, we have a bipartisan hatred of corruption. Wacky, I know. But among the establishment, so the Republican and Democratic parties, they're also bipartisan on this. They're bipartisan in favor of the corrupt system. Democrats take money from Wall Street on you know, at the federal level almost as much as Republicans do. In fact, I'm sure there's some election cycles where it's more. President Obama got a tremendous amount of money from Wall Street. So you have the establishment, the elite, are against ending corruption because that's how they fund their campaigns. It's I scratch your back, you scratch mine. They get tremendous lobbying jobs when they leave office. But the people are screaming about how, no, we're all against it. Joe Schmo in Arkansas, who's a far right winger, who would totally disagree with me on guns and abortion and a bunch of other stuff, he says, I don't want George Soros buying the politicians. I don't want those damn teachers' unions or lawyers buying the politicians. Well, I'll cut a deal with you right now, man. I won't let them fund the politicians if you don't let the Koch brothers and Sheldon Adelson and Wall Street fund the politicians. So there's agreement. Some polls are over 90% of the American people say, yeah, we need to stop the corruption. And this is a case where a wealthy Republican of all people, who usually love this system, they're saying, no, I'm going to do the right thing here. I'm going to stand up for the people because objectively, when I look at the system, it's screwed up. They're not representing the people, so let's try to do a ballot initiative to change that. I love it, and I hope it's not dismissed. I hope people do take it seriously, because, hey, for all the politicians who really do always favor corruption behind the scenes because it helps them out and it keeps them in power and it gets them great jobs when they leave power, for all you guys, if you're so proud of it and if you love it that dearly, well, then you should love wearing the patches. Sign of pride. Hey, yeah, this is who I represent. I represent ExxonMobil. I represent investment firms on Wall Street. What? I'm proud of it. This is what I do. But are you really going to have that reaction in public? Chances are, if you have to really wear it on your sleeve and be super open about just how bought you are, your dignity, your integrity, your honor gone when people just look at you, then it might make them think twice. We still have to go the further step, obviously, of getting a constitutional amendment to get money out of politics. But this is definitely a step in the right direction where you are using shame, the tool of shame, in a positive way. Okay, now, I'm not done with corruption. While I was gone, a lot of corruption piled up, unsurprisingly. And now we take a trip down to Alabama. I always think of South Park and Alabama Man. the like fake commercial they had. You guys got to check that out. In fact, stop listening to the live show if you are. Go watch that. There's a clip on YouTube that's like, I don't know, a minute long or something. The Alabama Man commercial. Watch it. For those of you who know what I'm talking about, it's fucking awesome, isn't it? All right, here we go. There's an incredible story of corruption coming out of Alabama. Governor Robert Bentley, which, if we can pause on that name for a second. If I was going to make up a name that sounded super corrupt, it would probably be Robert Bentley. Your last name is Bentley. On name alone, red flag. Now, that's totally unfair of me to say that, but that's the gut reaction I get when hearing it. I mean, it's possible to live in a world where Robert Bentley is a lovely dude, but it just sounds... Look out for that guy. So Robert Bentley decided it would be a fantastic idea to divert funds for the BP oil spill cleanup to his mansion. I mean, that's like comic book evil. Like, oh, you know, the people of your state are devastated. The economy of your state is devastated. Whatever, the fishing industry, other workers are devastated. We have funds that are supposed to go help them. Let's divert some of those to my pocket. Let's, you know, rebuild a mansion for me. How about that? So Think Progress reports, quote, Republican Governor Robert Bentley moved to divert funding from the 2010 BP oil spill recovery effort to finance the renovation of a second governor's mansion on the Gulf Coast. While Alabama's oyster industry and coastal communities continue to suffer from the effects of the massive Deepwater Horizon oil well blowout, repairs to the governor's mansion are estimated to cost between $1.5 million and $1.8 million. Though Bentley says he will stay there only on occasion, the administration said the property would be primarily used to wine and dine corporate executives considering the state for investment. Oh, man. So it's not, you know, mask is off. It's not even like, well, I want to rebuild this because there's some official business that we need to take care of at the state level and it involves whatever. No, it's, I'm doing this because I want to schmooze and wine and dine corporate executives so we can continue this circle jerk of money and power that is our corrupt system that runs on legalized bribery. And again, it's diverting funds from the cleanup effort and the help effort to rebuild the area after the disastrous BP oil spill. Now, to be totally fair and get all the facts out there, they claim, well, fear not, we'll make it up in some other way. You know, we'll take funding from elsewhere and put it back towards that. But, I mean, just the optics of this alone should make you jam on the brakes, man. Pump your brakes, dog. This is what you want to do? You want to divert funds for that? Now, again, if people think, well, it's a matter of necessity. What are you going to do? It was damaged in the BP oil spill, but it wasn't. You know, the mansion was not damaged in the BP oil spill. They say it suffered some damage during Hurricane Danny, which was a while ago, and they left it alone ever since. And it was actually built originally by infamous segregationist Governor George Wallace. And he was the last one that, like, regularly used it. And this guy's like, yeah, let me take the funds that are supposed to help people after the oil spill and rebuild the segregationist mansion so I could stay there for corrupt reasons to get legally bribed. Huh? Vote for me. You want to vote for this guy? You want to vote for this political party in Alabama? This is what you want to do. Deep South Alabama Republicans who do shit like this. And the thing that breaks my heart about it is there are a lot of good people who are simply duped over into voting Republican, and they think that's going to make their life better. Understand, I know a lot of these people. There are some people in my extended family who think like this, and their logic goes about this far. I want to keep my money, and Republicans want lower taxes for me, so I'm going to vote Republican to keep more of my money. That's it. That's as far as it goes. And they've said things to me, you know, as soon as you start making good money, you all understand. Well, you got to vote Republican. As soon as you make middle-class wage, you'll wanna vote Republican. Except if you actually took a moment to put aside the propaganda and look at the tax proposals from both political parties, you find unfailingly that the Democrats cut taxes more for 90 to 95% of the American people. And the only people who have it raised sometimes are the top 5% or so. So if you're middle class or you're poor and you're voting Republican and you think they're going to cut your taxes, they ain't talking about you, bitch. They're talking about the rich when they talk about how they're the party of tax cuts. Again, I don't want you to take my word for it. You know what you could look at? It was a perfect example of this that came up years ago. I remember when we discussed it on the show, and we've brought it up a few times. Go and look at CNN Money's analysis of John McCain's tax plan versus President Obama's tax plan. Obama cut taxes more for 90% of the American people. There was only a slight raise on, you know, the top 5 or 10%. Whereas McCain, he cut taxes a little bit for the bottom 90%, but Obama cut it more for the bottom 90%, and he cut taxes tremendously for the top 5 or 10%. So this is your choice. Don't believe the bullshit. Don't believe the propaganda just because somebody says Republicans are party of tax cuts. That ain't true. It's true that the Democrats cut taxes more for 90% of people, and the Republicans either cut it less or raise it on the bottom 90%. If anything, they're the party of tax hikes. Tax hikes for you. And they do shit like this. Now, the Democrats are horrible on the issue of corruption as well. They also take money from all the special interests. They also, at the national level, take money from Wall Street and do their bidding. So don't get me wrong. I'm not saying the Democrats are lovely and right about everything and the Republicans are wrong. No. I'm just saying that specifically if we're talking about Alabama Republicans, you should know they're not looking out for you when it comes to taxes. They're not looking out for you when it comes to any issues, even the social issues. It's a farce. They say those things to get elected, and they rarely do what you want them to do if you're a fundamentalist Christian. And then they also do shit like this. Open corruption in your face. Okay. Do I have time for one more? Nah, I'm right in that gray zone. All right, I'm not going to do it. I'll give you a super long tease about what you have to look forward to in the rest of the show. All right, when we come back from the break, I got Bernie Sanders, who hit the Sunday shows this week and argued that not only is he going to get Republican votes, he's going to get a certain kind of Republican vote that a lot of people in the establishment will roll their eyes. But what Bernie's saying is something that I've been arguing for a while now, and I don't quite think people are getting it. That Bernie's message has wider appeal than a lot of so-called experts admit. So we're going to talk about that. We're also going to talk about the basic income proposal that they're flirting with now in Germany. And then, oh God, this story coming out of Syria, it's like I had a team of people writing a fictional script as to how to prove me right on Syria all along. I've gotten a lot of shit for my position on Syria, by the way. Like, a lot of people accuse me, you don't understand it, you got to support these rebels for this reason, and blah, 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 blue, blue. That wrong. They're totally wrong. Wait until I tell you the story of the Syrian rebel commander who was killed in an airstrike. How this person is being portrayed in the Western media versus the reality of this person, and then you're going to take a moment and reflect on everything I've said about the fight in Syria and what's really happening and who really make up the two sides. And you're going to see that this isn't some sort of, what do we do? It's so hard kind of question. It's more, hey, if you want to do what the U.S. has been flirting with for a while, you're a dunce. Okay? You're ignorant or you're stupid. You either don't know the facts and you're a puppet for people in power, or you're just stupid and you can't put two and two together when it's in front of you and when they show you who the good guys are. So wait for it. You'll see it, and we'll get into detail. And then Congressman Peter King wants you to know that his plan of spying on all Muslims is not anti-Muslim. Let me repeat that. Congressman Peter King's plan of spying on all Muslims is not anti-Muslim. I'm going to have so much fun ripping apart his doublespeak. He is one of the most clownish politicians who's so in favor of ripping up your constitutional rights. And he's from New York. So yippee skippy in my backyard. All right, stay right there, guys. We'll be right back with that and much more. Alright, we're back, guys. Hey, by the way, I'm currently getting my ass handed to me in the Atheist of the Year poll. So I just want to throw that out there, you know. Don't feel bad or anything if you haven't voted yet, but you should probably fucking vote. As of right now, You have 1,334 total votes in. There's 20 hours left. I have 46% of the vote. He has 54% of the vote. So, good googly moogly. That ain't looking good for secular talk, is it? So we'll see. I'll post that other segment on YouTube, and hopefully that generates some votes for us. But I don't like fucking losing, dude. I don't like losing. Don't let me lose to this dude. Although, you know, to be kind to myself, this dude does have, I only have whatever it is, 18 point something thousand Twitter followers. He has 54,000. So on Twitter, he has already sufficiently handed me my ass time and time again. So perhaps I should, I mean, if anything, it's like an overrepresentation for me on the vote because I have so many fewer Twitter followers. But, hey, we'll see. Hopefully people on YouTube go, fuck that, I'm voting for my dog. All right, now let's jump into some more politics stuff here. We got Bernie Sanders. And an interesting argument that he's making. Bernie Sanders hit the Sunday shows this week, and he argued that not only is he going to get Republican votes, but he's going to get Trump votes. Now, this is a point where if you make it in the mainstream, as he did to his credit, he did it on the Sunday shows. But this is something that will be roundly mocked by everybody who's part of the establishment media, everybody who's part of the elite. This is a point that the so-called experts, the analysts, the commentators will say, oh, that is adorable. Look at this old Jew atheist socialist saying he's going to get Trump voters to vote for him. That just doesn't make any sense. He's dating himself when he says that. Is that a fair point to make? I'm going to respond to that in a second, but first let me give you Bernie's exact words. He said, what Trump has done with some success is taken that anger, taken those fears, which are legitimate, and converted them into anger against Mexicans, anger against Muslims. In my view, that is not the way we're going to address the problems facing this country. Now, he also went on to say, quote, working class people are angry because they are losing their jobs to overseas firms and cannot afford to send their children to college and are working longer hours for lower wages. All right, so here's the main point. What the establishment is going to argue and what their default mocking position is, it's wrong because they can only see the world and they only analyze the world through the lens of Democrat, Republican, Democrat, Republican, Democrat, Republican. They're not able to break free from that didactic black and white worldview to do a substantive political analysis. So they might point to one poll here or there, you know, that alludes to the fact that Hillary Clinton is winning by so much, which is true on the national level. But what they're not accounting for is more specifics, more detail, each individual poll on the issues and where Bernie Sanders falls, where the American people fall, and even where Republicans fall. See, that's the thing. If you actually go by what he's fucking saying, he's not only is he going to get Republican votes, he is going to get Trump votes because of how he's messaging his point and how he's portraying himself. So when he says something like, well, Trump is taking anger and fear and channeling it towards hatred of minorities. He says stuff like, you have to pay attention, where he says, fears which are legitimate. So the anger which is legitimate. That's Bernie Sanders saying, hey, look, I'm reaching out to you, dude. Like when he went into Liberty University, a crazy Christian fake university, to give a speech to try to get some of their support. He said, there are some issues we're just not going to agree on, some social issues. But on the economy, on economics, are we going to agree? Oh, you're damn right. And if you don't agree with me, listen to me and then hear me out, and then I'll make it so you know you agree with me. He's just awakening stuff in people's minds, even if they're on the right, that they didn't even know they believed. Like when the Tea Party clowns were holding up signs that said, "Keep your government hands off my Medicare." Well, Bernie's the guy that comes along and says, no, no, it's okay. I understand you're scared and you're fearful and you're in a bad situation and your economic situation sucks. And it's not your fault. It's the fault of the system. But, dude, let me help you out. Medicaid and Medicare, those are government programs. So you actually like the government program. And if you vote for me, I'm going to preserve those and I'm going to help you out. That's a message that crosses the political spectrum, crosses the partisan divide. When he says something like your fears, your anger is legitimate, but you're just pointing your finger at the wrong person, stop pointing at the Mexicans and the Muslims and the blacks and point at the billionaires, that's going to get through to some people. It's not like Joe Schmo in Alabama or Kentucky is sitting there going, you know, I really love Wall Street bankers who have multiple yachts and mansions. No, they're hearing a populist message, and they feel like Trump is giving them a populist message. But Trump's message, when you dig a little deeper, you realize he's just basically exploiting these issues to ride his way into power because he's a narcissist and because he's a crazy person. So, and every once in a while, I told you, Trump says everything. So he'll throw out there, hey, I want to do infrastructure spending and create jobs. Everybody's like, what the fuck? That's liberal. But that's the secret to Trump's success. He says everything. He throws out red meat and bigotry and racism and xenophobia, but then he also is like, corruption sucks, and hey, I'm gonna create jobs with infrastructure. Bernie Sanders comes along and he says, no, I'm going to give you a better life by doing the right policies, by giving you health care, education, all these things, jobs, you name it, infrastructure spending. And also, hey, by the way, don't get duped by that clown with the ferret on his head over there because he's just exploiting you and using you to get your vote. So is this message going to appeal? You bet your ass it will. People don't realize, man, this hyper-partisan environment is something that's relatively modern. I mean, there was a whole category of people back in the day. You guys probably don't remember this. It was before I was born, too, but I've learned about it. A whole category of people called Reagan Democrats. You're like, wait, what? I thought Democrats hated Reagan. Yeah, but, again, at that time, he won in a landslide. He won in a landslide because he was a better candidate, and he was able to appeal to people more, and he crossed the partisan divide. Somebody like Bernie Sanders can cross the partisan divide. And people in Washington might not realize that. Armchair pontificators might not realize that. But the polling data shows it, and he's messaging his argument in a way where it's going to pierce through and it's going to have a broader effect than you realize. But all this is contingent upon him getting past Hillary, and that's the hardest race he has. So if he were to get by Hillary, I think he'd have a much easier time in the general election. No establishment pundit will tell you that because they don't believe that because they're not that bright. But in a general election, he would knock it out of the park. His hardest race is right now against Hillary because she already has celebrity status and they're burying the debates and the DNC is biased against him and a trillion other reasons. Now, let's move on to the basic income idea. The International Business Times is reporting that Germany is going to test a basic income policy. So this is something we discussed recently in the context of, I think it was Finland, and there's some other European countries that are toying with the idea. But the project, in the case of Germany, was actually launched by an entrepreneur who crowdfunded everything so far to this point. And the idea is he wants to give $1,100 checks to 26 people over how long, I don't know exactly. But basically, the goal is no more social welfare programs, no more means testing, no more programs for specific things and that can only be spent on said specific things. It's just you give them a $1,100 check every month, and then they spend that as they determine, so they get to make the choice, but no other specific programs to help them out. And the idea is hopefully you set up an incentive structure where you're not giving them too much where they don't want to work, but you're giving them just the right amount where they're okay and they have the ability to be creative and make a living, you know, take a chance and maybe make a living in a way that's a little unorthodox as they deem fitting. Or they have leeway to take more time to find a different job and not just settle for the first one that they come across. And this is a new idea that's, you know, been gaining a lot of steam, and it's been getting a lot of attention recently, and a lot of different countries are toying with it. They say, quote, every few weeks, Bollmeyer, who's the entrepreneur who decided to launch this program, picks more people through drawings to receive the monthly checks. The experiment team picks from a pool of more than 66,000 applicants. Drawings take place whenever enough donations are collected. So far, a total of 31,449 people have made donations. So people are getting behind this, and they see this as an alternative to what we do now, where it's more specific programs, and you means tested, and you can only get in under certain conditions and all that. It's a way to simplify it. So as I described the last time we discussed this, the thing that I was originally in favor of, and I still like to some extent, is what's called a negative income tax rate. Because that makes it so that you're not giving a $1,000 check every month to people who are already rich and don't need it, and you don't have to deal with, as you know, like inflationary issues, for example, that I fear if you do a system like this. The idea is you try to incentivize people to work, but also have that safety net, that cushion that takes care of them. So with the negative income tax rate, you make it so that if somebody makes, say, $20,000 a year, they might receive back, they might be in a negative 5% or negative 10% bracket, and they receive back more money. But if you're somebody who makes $1 million a year, you know, you're going to be paying taxes, you're not going to get anything back from the state. So I like that idea. I think it's a better idea for a variety of reasons. But the reason why I'm starting to like the idea more and more of a basic income is that you can do it right. So in other words, you don't just dump money that's going to disincentivize people from working. So you can do it right. You can tie it to some sort of, you know, socialized thing in society. Like, for example, a lot of European nations have, you know, their oil industry is owned by the state, so that money goes to the people. So you can tie it to that. And also, we have this thing to worry about with the future where, you know, you have a move towards more and more technology, more and more machines being used to replace people. I sound like Bill O'Reilly, man, the machines. And if we get to that point when the machines look like they'll inevitably take over and our labor is obsolete, well, then we have a choice. Either the captains of industry keep all the money for themselves and everybody becomes poor and then there's some sort of revolution and there's political instability, or we make it so that, you know, we actually do proper distribution of wealth and you make it so that people are assigned a machine or a certain technology that does the labor for them and they reap the benefits and they make the money. And you can, you know, divvy up income that way where we can all live in like a semi-utopia where you don't have to work, but you get material well-being, and then you can live your life as you deem appropriate. So the future and what's going to happen with technology leads me to be in favor of something like a basic income. But in terms of like at today, as of right now, I actually still lean more towards the negative income tax rate because the way the economy is structured at the moment, I think you will disincentivize people from working if you do it the wrong way. And you got to be very careful about how you structure something like a basic income. And I don't have full confidence that they will. But with a negative it will structure it properly. But if with a negative income tax rate, you know, I think you just have to make the right brackets and that's it. And then it will work. And then you can provide for the poorest among you and give middle class people a break while still taxing the rich, you know, a fair amount. So it's a complex issue. But just know the heart of this story is, hey, the basic income is getting more and more popular. And this is something where it may be the next step that ends up replacing kind of very complex structures we have today economically in our social safety nets in many Western governments where, you know, you'll have, like in the U.S., for example, you have Medicaid, you have Medicare, you have welfare. You have other programs that are specifically for, like, the WIC program for food and for formula for babies. The idea behind it is replace all that, scrap all those programs, and just give people $1,000 or so a month and let them decide how they want to spend it. So we'll see how it unfolds, but the idea is getting more and more popular, and it may be the next step in how governments try to deal with poverty. So we'll have to see if it works, and we'll have to see if the incentive structure is good, and we'll be able to see if it lifts people out of poverty in a way that's better and more successful than the other programs. The other programs actually don't work poorly. A lot of people say the war on poverty hasn't worked. That's actually not true. The statistics show it's been tremendous in many areas. But will this be better? Maybe. And we're going to have to wait and see. All right, now let's go to the serious story because, ooh boy, is this telling. I'll be patting myself on the back throughout this in an insufferable way. Zarin Alush is one of the top rebel leaders in the Syrian civil war, and he was killed by, some say, a Russian airstrike, and others say just a Syrian government airstrike. So this happened just recently, and the U.S. is not very happy about this, and some Western analysts are not very happy about this. But this is actually a perfect time to show you how deep the rot of propaganda is on the issue of Syria. So listen to how the New York Times described this rebel commander, and then I'm going to tell you the reality about him. So this is what they say. Unlike harder-line armed groups, the Army of Islam, which is the group that he led, has shown a recent interest in taking part in politics. Mr. Alush had a history of sectarian statements, but after meeting with American officials, he softened his tone. His death was described as a big day for supporters of ISIS and the Assad regime. So they go on to describe him as like, hey, you know, he had his problems, pushed under the rug. But don't worry, he was anti-ISIS, so moderate rebels. He's a moderate rebel. These are the kind of people that the U.S. can do business with and work with, and we can use somebody like this to topple Assad and then do regime change and move on from there. So, what's the general sentiment you're getting from these excerpts from the New York Times article? And by the way, you can go read the whole article. There are parts where they're slightly more clear about what this guy really is. But these statements are troubling to say the least, and I'll explain exactly why in a second. But again, the general sentiment you should get from this is moderate rebel. There are some headlines that say the peace process in jeopardy in Syria because this guy was killed. So he was one they were going to use to do a transition government or do a shared power government with Assad to try to get an end to the civil war in Syria. So this is how he's being portrayed in the West in our various media outlets, and the New York Times of all places, which sometimes does a decent job. What's the reality on him? This guy called for the cleansing of all Alawites and Shias in Damascus, out and out called for genocide. They have his quotes. He's like, yeah, cleanse it of Alawites and Shiites. And that's what Assad is, by the way. Assad is an Alawite and a Shia, and you know, the people who are fighting for the regime, as they call it, for the government forces, Alawites and Shias, many of them. He's like, kill them all. Moderate rebel who we can work with. This guy gave a speech on the importance of the Hajj, and in the speech, he praised Osama bin Laden. Again, this is a guy who Western media outlets, the U.S. government, and many people just accept, no, he's a moderate rebel. Why is he moderate? Well, he's not ISIS. Congratulations. You want a fucking cookie? Are you kidding me? That's what it takes to be called a moderate today? Well, he's not ISIS. Well, by that logic, I guess you could say al-Nusra, which is al-Qaeda in Syria, I guess they're moderates too, right? But again, I say that like mockingly, but General Petraeus floated that idea to Obama in a meeting, on the record. He's like, you know, why don't we arm al-Qaeda? Because al-Qaeda might fight ISIS. Good. And then also al-Qaeda will fight Assad. Good. You want to arm the people that attacked us on 9/11. You want to arm people who are jihadists, and they're telling you they're jihadists. You want to make the same mistake Reagan did with the Mujahideen when he armed them and they became the Taliban and al-Qaeda and used those weapons against us. You think if you arm Al-Qaeda, they're not going to eventually use weapons against you? How fucking stupid are you? You have to be the dumbest person on planet Earth. So this guy, they say, nope, even better. More moderate rebel. He's the head of the Army of Islam. And he spoke to us once or twice and told us what we wanted to hear. Therefore, he's a good guy, even though he called for genocide against Shias, even though he praised Osama bin Laden in a speech. By the way, he also took part in a well-known massacre of civilians in Syria. And let's keep everything in perspective, too. A lot of people will say, wrongly, Assad killed 250,000 people. That's what he did. Flat-out propaganda. Totally not true. Don't take my word for it. Go look at the numbers compiled by all the respected human rights groups, Amnesty International, the UN, you name it. And the casualty rate is about 50-50 between the rebels and the government forces. And both sides have killed civilians. And I'm not defending it on either side. I'm against killing civilians across the board. But just know that when people say Assad is responsible for every death of a civilian in there, that's simply not true. That's not true. These are a lot of the rebels. ISIS, one of the biggest rebel groups in Syria. Al-Nusra, which is Al-Qaeda, one of the biggest rebel groups in Syria. The Army of Islam, the one that this guy was the head of, one of the biggest rebel groups in Syria. Guy's a moderate. I got more for you. Not only did he take part in a massacre in Syria, he kidnapped human rights activists. Stay classy. And when asked to clarify comments on Al-Qaeda and Osama bin Laden and people who he's praised in the past, he said, no, did I stutter? Al-Qaeda is, quote, our brothers. So, go ahead, tell me what I told you. Tell me what I told you. I've gotten so much shit for my position on Syria, but anybody who's actually read about Syria and looked at the articles, gotten into the details instead of just taking what other people have said that you just said, that must be true because that person said it. How about you read the nuance and the detail of what's actually happening in Syria, and then you'll realize very quickly, oh, wait a second, the rebels today are almost all jihadists at worst or Islamists at best. And all the so-called secular moderate rebels, gone. They fled to Turkey. They fled to Europe. They're nowhere to be found. There's like 8 FSA dudes left in there. And a lot of the FSA dudes have truces with people in the jihadist groups because they say our bigger enemy is Assad. So what are we going to do? We're going to make the same mistake we made in Iraq? Today, everybody says about Iraq, well, we shouldn't have gone in there because Saddam Hussein, as terrible of a guy he was, he stabilized the region, and it wasn't our business anyway to go in there. He didn't attack us. He had nothing to do with it, with 9/11. So why would we have toppled him? And then what came up out of the power vacuum was worse. And today, we say the opposite about Syria. We got to support with some of the rebels. Find the rebels to support because we got to topple Assad because he's such a bad guy. And then I guarantee you, whatever takes the place of Assad is not going to be worse and is going to be something that fills the power vacuum that's like a jihadist or an Islamist group. Oh, yes, it will. Of course it will. Of course you're going to have. The best organized and most aggressive rebel groups in the region are all jihadists and Islamists. Now, you can hate Assad. I got no problem with you hating Assad. But the idea that if you topple him, it's going to make the U.S. more safe, it's not. It's not. He's fighting ISIS. He's fighting the rebels, of course, by definition. They want to topple him. But the real reason why we're against Assad is because Assad is backed by Iran, our enemy, and Russia, our enemy. So, you know, we don't like the fact that there's an ally of those guys in the region, even though that ally is the leading force fighting jihadists. But now we're like, well, it's not that clear because we don't like him there because we're against Russia and Iran, so are moderate rebels? Who are your moderates, bitch? This guy is their moderate. Do a genocide against the Shias. Hey, Osama bin Laden is awesome. Al-Qaeda are my brothers. Here are your fucking moderate Syrian rebels today. Tell me, what makes the most sense for the U.S. to do? Should we go try to topple Assad, just like we did with Saddam Hussein, and what happened? Something worse came out. Is that what we should do? Should we try to find mythical, fake moderate rebels again? We tried before. We literally only ended up with 5. And then they handed their weapons over to Al-Qaeda the second they got into Syria. So what do you want to do? You want to try to support rebels, or you want to stay out, and say, look, man, I don't like either side, and that's fine. You shouldn't like either side. But in terms of stability, in terms of what's the best outcome that will protect the West and How will Syria be better off moving forward? Who do you want to win? The jihadists or Assad? You tell me. Okay, I got to take a break. When we come back, Congressman Peter King of New York is going to talk about spying on all Muslims because he's a jackass. And then I'm going to get into, I'm going after fundamentalist Jews, I'm going after fundamentalist Muslims, I'm going after everybody in a little bit in this final segment. I'm going to work, bro. All right, stay right there. Welcome back, guys. By the way, happy birthday to Lilith Penn. She, as I said, she's my right-hand girl here, Secular Talk. Quite a bit to the show. Wouldn't have 8 trillion subscribers without her, that's for sure. And I hope she has a good year. I don't have much to say other than she's awesome. So I guess that's where I'm going to leave it. Happy birthday, Will. All right. Let's go to Congressman Peter King here. because he's going to master doublespeak. Congressman Peter King of New York is very concerned about Muslim Americans. So he's going to give us some classic doublespeak here and explain what we should do about it.
Need better surveillance of mosques in the United States, yeah. Quoting you. The only way you're going to find out this in advance is to do the same type of 24/7 surveillance that was done in the Italian-American communities when they were going after the mafia and the Irish communities when they're going after the Westies. You look where the terror threat is going to come from, and right now it is going to come from the Muslim community. I can hear the cries of civil libertarians and constitutionalists right now, Congressman.
Yeah, listen, they can cry all they want. The fact is, that's where the threat is coming from. And we can say that 98-99% of the Muslims in this country are good people. I'm actually swearing in the first elected Muslim on Long Island to office. She's a good friend of mine. So this is nothing against Muslims. But the fact is, that is where the threat is coming from. And we're kidding ourselves. We have this blind political correctness, which makes no sense.
What kind of limits are being placed on U.S. investigative agencies that prevents them from infiltrating these mosques or pursuing sources that they know could be beneficial?
Basically, Justice Department guidelines make it very difficult. Local police, and again, in New York, the NYPD did a phenomenal job. Liberty Union, the New York Times, tried to cut back on that. Mayor de Blasio, I think, made too many concessions. They're still doing a great job, don't get me wrong, but they're doing it in spite of a lot of the restraints that some are trying to put on them. But as far as the feds, they are very limited. They basically cannot be infiltrating mosques. I think it has to be done.
It's adorable how he always sets it up as a false choice. Either you're in favor of spying on all Muslims, or you're not in favor of doing any spying and you're okay with terror attacks. No, if you have evidence of wrongdoing or radicalization or a potential terror threat, take your evidence to a judge, get a fucking warrant, stay within the constitutional guidelines, you know, that fucking crazy thing, the Constitution, which we're all supposed to abide by, get your warrant and then do your spying. See, don't buy into the false choice nonsense. There's not a single civil libertarian on the planet who's against spying or surveillance if you first show your evidence and show that you should be spying, get your warrant, and then do your spying. So you can be in favor of the process and the system as it exists right now and as the Constitution lays out and still catch the bad guys by going through that system. But he makes it seem like either you're in favor of spying on all Muslims or you're in favor of not even spying with a warrant when it's necessary and, you know, you're a terrorist enabler or whatever the fuck kind of nonsense he would come up with. And that's just not true. It's a false dichotomy. And he says, this is classic doublespeak. He says, this is nothing against Muslims. But then he goes on to say, spy on all Muslims. But that is against Muslims. That is against Muslims. That's like saying the KKK exists today, and they do. There are still KKK people. They're not nearly as active as they used to be, but they're around. So you say, okay, the KKK exists. Therefore, they burn crosses. They say they're a Christian organization. I got to spy on every Christian church. That makes so little sense that there's no other word for it except stupid. Because, so with the Muslim example, let's go with that. Okay, so he says, we're afraid of terrorists. So he's afraid of jihadist terror. Okay. Well, what about the Shias? What about Shia mosques? The jihadists want to kill all the Shias. They're Sunni extremists. They want to kill all the Shias. So why would you spy on the Shias? They're going to be the victims of the jihadist threat. So that doesn't make any sense. What about Ahmadiyya Muslims? How about them? Incredibly moderate, have nothing to do with jihad. Very moderate branch of Islam. What about them? You're going to spy on them, even though they are not the problem? I mean, that's the same. It's like, you know, saying, okay, the KKK, what specific brand of Christianity are they? They're fundamentalist extremist Protestants. So let's go spy on all the Catholics. But the Catholics have nothing to do with that. And you could go down a list, the Lutherans, whatever. There's all these different branches that have different philosophies and are either fundamentalists or not fundamentalists, and it's just this gross blanket, yes, generalized way of thinking. And Peter King even admitted himself, Well, we don't have to worry about 98% of them. So then why are you advocating for spying on all of them? That doesn't make any sense. By his own logic, we're wasting resources. And the way to really go about this, guys, because, you know, let's not be silly people here and pretend like anybody's in favor of a tax or something like that. It's how do you most effectively prevent this? And I would argue probably one of the best ways to prevent it is you build a relationship with moderates in the community, and then they help you get the extremists. And Peter King acts like we haven't tried his way. They tried his way in New York City. You know how much evidence they got and how much help they got? Zero. No help from the Muslim community. Compare that with Canada, where they foiled the plot because you had law enforcement officials working with people in the Muslim community, and the Muslim community came directly to them because they trusted them. They know that they don't view me as the bad guy just because I'm Muslim. So he spoke to them, and they said, look, we think that these guys are radicalized, and they're going to do something here. So then they stopped it. They were able to prevent an attack on a train. This isn't that long ago. Remember, we discussed it on the show. And Peter King goes on to give an example. You didn't see it in that clip, but he gives the example of the Tsarnaev, the Boston bombers, those brothers. And he says, well, they were kicked out of their mosque because they were radicalized. And then he uses that as evidence to spy on all Muslims. Yeah, but wait, think about what you just said. They were kicked out of their mosque because they were radicalized. People in the mosque wanted nothing to do with them. So if you had a working relationship with the mosque and your law enforcement, what are they going to do? After they kick them out, they call you up and they go, hey, Mona Lee, look over here. These motherfuckers are crazy. But since you didn't set up that relationship, they kick them out and then they don't do anything because they think you're against them too and they don't trust you. They don't know what the fuck's going to happen when they contact you. They might think that you're going to lump them in with the radicalized ones. It's just stupid, but he sees only in black and white. There's no gray because he's dealing with the other. If it's him and his Christianity, he's like, oh, you know, of course there's different varieties and flavors, and you don't blame all Christians for the action of a single Christian. I mean, that would be ridiculous. Anders Breivik said in his manifesto, I'm doing this in the name of Christianity. I'm a Christian. He's like, that's not Christianity. Well, then why don't you at least acknowledge that there are moderate Muslims that exist and they should not be spied on? He says 98% of them are not the problem. Okay, well then why would you want to spy on them? And then final point here. Dude, he says that, you know, that this is where the threat is coming from. What threat? Yes, the Muslim community is where the jihadist threat is coming from. The Sunni extremist Muslim community is where the jihadist threat is coming from. He doesn't even get that specific. But if you're talking about threats, generally speaking, 56% of terror attacks in the U.S. are right-wing terror attacks. Now, don't get me wrong. You can still say it's a fair point and it's factually true to say, well, there's still an overrepresentation of Islamic terrorism because they're, whatever, 1% of the population and they've done 10 or 12% of the terrorist attacks. Overrepresentation, so that's an issue. I'm not disputing that. That's true. That is a terror threat for sure. But can we not just disregard the fact that as a raw number, 56% of the terrorist attacks, there are more right-wing terror attacks than any other terror attacks in the country? I'm accepting the fact that there's disproportionate Islamic terrorism, no question. And when you account overseas, of course, there's way more Islamic terrorism. Inside the U.S., domestic terrorism, 56% are right-wing terror attacks. If you want to dismiss that, perhaps you are the apologist. Perhaps you're the one trying to cover something up. Because he doesn't even mention that, and he says this is where the threat is coming from. But what about that threat over there? No, I'm not even going to mention that. Doesn't even get an honorable mention. Never mind, like, mentioning it and then downplaying it. No, he says, I'm not going to mention it. Sovereign citizens do a tremendous number of terror attacks. Neo-Nazis, the KKK, you go down the list. We've discussed these groups before. We've covered the attacks. We've covered the foil plots. The list goes on and on. But nobody fucking covers them in the mainstream media, and it doesn't get into his fucking head. Peter King, almost called him Steve King. Steve King's an idiot too. But this is why liberals are facepalm when you talk, because you just disregard the shit that disproves your theory and run with your theory. It's confirmation bias happening right in front of our eyes. You know, this is where the threat is coming from. What about the mass shooting threat? You got anything to say about that? You got anything to say about the fact that there are 32,000 gun deaths in America every single year. 32,000. Homicides, suicides, accidents, you name it. 32,000 gun deaths every year in America. The overwhelming majority of mass shooters are either middle-aged white people or younger white people, white males. Where's your, you know, this is where the threat is coming from. What am I going to do? I got to have the cops crack down on white males. That's where the threat is coming from for mass shooting. See, he's only looking at the evidence that already fits his ideology. Look at all of the evidence. Have a conversation about all of the evidence, but you can't do that because it disproves your theory and it disproves your ideology. The reality is, yes, we should all be in favor of surveillance and spying when there is evidence of wrongdoing and you get a fucking warrant. Don't come to me having a conversation about spying without a warrant, because that is unconstitutional, and therefore I will not even entertain the idea, because that's the whole point of the Constitution, is that certain things are off the table. All right, more. I got to speed up here because I got a lot more to get to. The government of Somalia has banned Christmas. The BBC reports that foreigners are still allowed to celebrate it. It's very kind of the Somalian government. And UN compounds and bases for African Union peacekeepers are allowed to celebrate it. But it's banned for everyone else. There can be no outside decorations. There can be no public celebrations in any way, shape, or form. And a top official at Somalia's Justice and Religious Affairs Ministry said the following. I love this quote for a number of reasons. Quote, "Having Muslims celebrate Christmas in Somalia is not the right thing. Such things are akin to the abandonment. Those celebrations are not in any way related to Islam." It's always funny when people say things and they think it's like a debate ender and they think it's like they're perfectly clear and then we could just all move along. No, but that makes no sense. He's like, no, it's cool. We're just banning Christmas because it's in no way related to Islam. Oh, well, in that case, wonderful. Go ahead and ban Christmas. No, I don't give a shit. I don't give a shit. What's stunning is, like, it doesn't even look like the idea of to each their own has entered this jackass's head. And Somalia implemented Sharia law in 2009, by the way. That partially explains this. But it, like, the idea of, okay, well, I'm Muslim and I don't want to celebrate it and I want to do these other things, so I'm going to do that. And you're Christian, you can go ahead and celebrate Christmas. You're an atheist, you know, you can celebrate nothing if you'd like. That thought is like, to him, that's like, what do you mean? I mean, obviously, I'm a Muslim and I'm a fundamentalist and I believe in Sharia, so I get to tell you what to do. No. How about that? And then if you flip it, imagine flipping the script, how quickly they would whine and bitch and moan and scream oppression. If the eight Christians in Somalia were like, oh, by the way, we're not allowing any more Muslim holidays. It's over. How would they act? Oh, that's cool. He's saying it's in the name of Christianity, just no more Muslim holidays. What are you going to do? It's fine. No, they'd be like, oh my God, oppression, Islamophobia, injustice. And actually it would be if you say, hey, I'm just going to ban all Muslim holidays. But it's the same thing if you ban all Christian holidays. And then, look, I brought up atheists before. Ha ha, laugh along with me, because there's even less toleration of atheists. I mean, you don't want to, in certain Muslim countries with certain fundamentalist governments where they have Sharia, you don't want to tell anybody you're an atheist. We know what happens. Okay? In Saudi Arabia, they declared that all atheists are terrorists. Way to take a word and then pretend like it has no meaning. Terrorists. Violence in the name of a political ideology. So as they, ironically, as they do violence in the name of their political ideology, Sharia, against atheists, they say, look at these atheist terrorists. Why are they such terrorists? You're the terrorist. You're the one that says, I will do state violence against you if you admit to being an atheist. It's unreal. It's amazing. It's all projection. They act like everybody else is the bad guy. We're under attack, so we must ban everything that we don't like. Christmas gone, atheism, you're gone, and you're terrorists if you believe in atheism, et cetera, et cetera. It's all projection. They're the guilty ones. And let's face it, they're the insecure ones too. Because if you really, truly believe to your core that you're right, well then, for fuck's sake, Almighty Allah is on your side. You don't need Allah to kill a cartoonist or put an atheist in jail or behead an infidel or ban Christmas. Because Allah looks at it and goes, they're worshiping the wrong religion. I mean, I feel bad for them. They're gonna, you know, rot in hell, eternal damnation. Well, if they're going to get eternal damnation, why do they need your puny punishment on earth? But that's the thing, is they're insecure. They don't really know it's true. It's an identity thing. They latch onto it, and they lash out against anybody that disagrees with them. And as they say, you're oppressing them, they're oppressing you. So, no. We need to believe in freedom, that wacky idea, and human rights. So I don't believe in Christmas. I think it's silly. I think it's ridiculous. I mean, it was stolen from a pagan tradition and a Germanic tradition, and it's a mix of corporatism and capitalism and mythology and sprinkling a little bit of Christianity. So it's silly. It's wrong. It's incorrect. But I don't ban silly, wrong, incorrect things because you have the freedom to, you know, enjoy it and have a party, have a festival, whatever it is. In the name of your thing. I want to give that right to Christians. I want to give that right to Muslims. I want to give that right to atheists. I want to give that right to everybody. And you allow for all that. Anybody could be whatever the fuck they want to be, as long as they don't take away the rights of others. And what we're talking about here in Somalia is they're taking away the rights of others. The Independent is reporting on a stunning issue that I was wholly ignorant of until recently. It's the issue of Sharia courts in the UK. Now, my initial reaction was to assume that these are exactly like the so-called Muslim no-go zones in Europe, which, by the way, are mythical. Fox News mentioned it, and they ran with it, and they kept repeating it. Fact-checkers came out of the woodworks laughing at them, mocking them. Snopes looked into it. It's just not true that there are no-go zones where it's only Muslims who are allowed. So that was not real. I thought that Sharia courts were the same. It turns out that's not true. They indeed exist. So let me tell you what they report here. Quote, Sharia courts in Britain are locking women into marital captivity and doing nothing to officially report domestic violence, according to an academic who gained unprecedented access to Islamic divorce hearings. Mokhtel Zay, forgive me for not knowing how to pronounce that, a legal scholar at Leighton University, says, judges at the courts uphold the theory and practice of the stronghold men have over women and set out to frustrate women whose husbands do not want them to leave. Sharia courts, or councils as they're known, cannot overrule regular courts, but are responsible for issuing Islamic divorce certificates and giving advice on other aspects of religious law. Research has suggested there are around 30 such councils active in the UK. By the way, that's the number the Independent gives. The International Business Times, which also, by the way, these are not conservative publications, so it's not, believe me, I looked into this. This isn't, you know, nonsense WorldNet Daily made up shit, okay? International Business Times says 85. Sharia courts in the UK. They continue, Sharia divorce courts are acknowledged as mediation and arbitration bodies under the 1996 Arbitration Act. Oh, isn't that precious? So it's a loophole. They're exploiting a legal loophole to do Sharia courts in the UK, where they say, well, you know, you have your system of law. We disagree. We're going to do our own little, you know, fundamentalist religious law over here, and we're going to have people from our community go over here, and they're going to follow those judgments. So leave us alone. See, when you read this, you begin to see why some people are concerned about multiculturalism. Now, as I've made perfectly clear, if by multiculturalism you mean different races, religions, ethnicities, backgrounds, all kinds of people coming together to be in the same nation, under the same banner of that nation, and you have a melting pot where you all respect each other and love each other and learn from each other and use the best part of everybody's culture, but you're under one law, if that's what you mean by multiculturalism, I'm the biggest multiculturalist on the planet. I love that system. I think it's the best system. But if by multiculturalism you mean, hey, let's have people have their own separate pockets of whatever law they want to have, well, I say fuck no to that. Why? Because that's crazy. That's anarchy. I mean, imagine this in any other context. Let's say for a second neo-Nazis set up their own little enclave. They're heavy in certain pockets in certain places across Europe, and they are, by the way. You know, you have the Golden Dawn Party in Greece, among others, in different places. So, okay, the far right, they say, you know, you're fascist phobes, and we're now going to set up our own little enclaves with our own little fascist authoritarian judicial branches, and we're going to exploit this loophole because it's just arbitration. We're just giving, you know, ideas and concepts and making rulings to our own people in our own community. And if you disagree, well, you're a fascist phobe and you're a bigot and piss off. No, that's crazy. Nobody would say it's liberal to say, oh, let the fascists have their own enclave where they have authoritarian rule and they force the women to not get divorced. We'd all say, no. You're crazy fundamentalists. You're zealots. You're the bigots. You're the intolerant ones. You can believe what you want, but we all live under one law. You know, you don't get to shut down debate by saying you're a fascist phobe. No, I'd say, yeah, I'm a liberal. I am against intolerance. You're not going to get me to be tolerant of intolerant by putting the word phobe on the end of a word. Saying, okay, you're a fascist phobe. Ooh, irrational fear of fascists. No, it's not irrational. It's logical. Yeah, I don't like fascists. By the same token, I don't like fundamentalist Muslims. I also don't like fundamentalist Christians. I don't like Orthodox Jews. The extremists are the problem. And here we've set up a system where the extremists have free reign. Go ahead. We found a loophole, and now there's a court where women are now have no rights. They're not allowed to get a divorce. When they want to get a divorce, they go into detail and they explain how this woman was there for hours watching these proceedings. The judge laughed at some of the women when they were asking for perfectly legitimate things. They were like, oh, my husband hits me, and, you know, I don't feel safe. And the judge laughs and says, well, why'd you marry him then? This is in the UK. This isn't Saudi Arabia, son. This isn't the tribal, rural areas of Afghanistan. Oh, no. There are certain things that are not debatable, okay? A secular government, so a nation run on democracy and rationality and logic and constitutional rights that are human rights, not debatable, off the fucking table. You can have your say. You could join a political party that totally disagrees with me and my philosophy and whatever. Let's have that debate. Let's have that discussion. But to say, no, I get to set up my own little court system over here, or I get to set up my own little government within a government over here that is fundamentally against human rights and all the other things that we hold dear, I say, hell no. Hell no. I'm going to be tolerant of tolerance. I'm not going to be tolerant of intolerance, because then that defeats the purpose, and then I am, by default, intolerant as well. Women have a right to say, I'm done with your bullshit. Okay, I'm leaving. You're not going to hit me anymore. There's another woman whose husband took out some sort of insurance policy or something, took out a loan in his wife's name, and then says, oh, you want to divorce me? Okay, you can divorce me after you pay me back 10,000 euros. And the judge heard that case and was like, you got to stay with him. This is unreal. No. Break up these courts immediately. You follow the law that applies to all of us. You don't get special rights to take away the rights of women and gays and others, and you don't get to set up Sharia law inside the UK in the same way that I'm not going to let a Christian theocracy develop in Alabama. I am going to go in there with federal authorities and say, bitch, think again. We got law and we're going to enforce it. This is how rule of law works. This is how democracy and rationality works. You don't get to take away others' rights and say, if you question that, you're taking away my rights. No, we're not. You're the one taking away rights, and we're protecting them. All right, more. Haaretz is reporting on a disturbing story from an Orthodox Jewish wedding. Extremists thought it would be a lovely idea to dance to music while stabbing a picture of a dead Palestinian baby.
לאחר החתונה, המשטרה והשב"כ החרימו את התיעוד ופתחו בחקירה. בין היתר יחקרו מי העביר רובים צהליים ואקדחים ברישיון לידי ילדים. כלי הנשק עוברים מיד ליד, גם ילדים אוחזים באקדחים, האווירה לוהטת, ריקוד הנקמה והסכינים הופך למיצג מטורף. שימו לב לתמונתו של התינוק עלי דוואבשה שנשרף למוות, מונפת בידי החוגגים, תוך שאחד מהם דוקר עם סכין את תמונתו של הפעוט. והנה שוב הרגע שבו תמונתו של עלי דוואבשה, בן השנה וחצי, נדקרת שוב ושוב לצהלות ולשמחת החוגגים. מול תמונות הזוועה הללו, ולאחר התקפות נגד השב"כ בשבועות האחרונים, זוכה הארגון ביממה האחרונה לגיבוי מראשי הימין, מרבנים, וגם מראש מועצת...
Ali Dawabshe is the name of that baby. He was killed by Jewish settler terrorists who firebombed his house. All other family members died as well. There were some that were able to hang on a little longer, but they eventually died of their wounds. Terrorists. There's no other word to describe this. They're terrorists. That's what they are. They stole land. They did it in the name of their extremist religious ideology, okay? They think they have a divine right to all of the land, land that Palestinians are currently living on. In the West Bank, they go, no, it's mine. My holy book says it's mine. I'm going to take this land, and if I have to kill some babies in the process, not only so be it, they literally celebrate it. They celebrate it. This is why fundamentalist religion is horrific and grotesque and disgusting across the board. You know, there are Christian fundamentalists who actively root for end times because that's when Jesus comes back, kills almost all the Jews, and then brings you to heaven with him, where you get to hang out with Marilyn Monroe and Elvis Presley. There are people who want that to happen. Michelle Bachmann roots for end times. She's spoken about this. And that pushes people to actively be in favor of giving all the land to Israel and kicking off the Palestinians. If you got to kill them, kill them. That's what happens. There are jihadists who want to set up a global caliphate, kill all the infidels. We're going to take all the land. Sorry, you're not of the right religion. I'm going to kill you. Now, this is the same thing coming from Orthodox Jews. My land, because I say so, because my holy book says so, I'm just following what God wants. Not only am I going to kill your babies, but then I'm going to celebrate it after. I'm going to sing and dance as I stab a picture of your baby. And I dance. No. These are my enemy. And by the way, Netanyahu really seems like I'm against this. You know how you really show that you're against this? Bring them to justice. Those people were friends with the people who actually killed the baby, the terrorists who killed the baby. Okay? Only 8% of Jewish settler terrorists are indicted, not even convicted, indicted. That's just step one. Only 8% are indicted. They haven't even indicted this guy yet, even though we know that they killed the baby and they firebombed the house and they killed the family. So spare me your crocodile tears and your, oh, I'm so against this, these are bad people because they make us look bad. No. You're really against it? Bring the people who did the crime to justice and have a better indictment rate than 8%. Jewish settler terrorists should be found guilty and not just Palestinian terrorists. Okay, I'm out of time, guys. I love you. We're back tomorrow. Peace.